now may we welcome Arisa to speak to step 11.
Thank you.
There we go. Good evening, everybody. My name's Arisa, and I'm still an alcoholic. Once a pickle, never a cucumber. And that's my story, and I'm sticking with it. Wow, what a weekend. What a weekend. And you guys are the hardcore ones. You know, you're still here. You're still coming, and you know, you're my people. I gotta stop again and just say thank you to everyone. Thank you to this amazing conference committee. And, you know, they opened up registration, and that means, you know, we hope you're going to be back next year, but they really need people to volunteer. So when jump in. This is so much fun, and I hope you're having as good a time as I am. I've gone through lots of Kleenexes. So step 11. We're doing two sessions on step 11, if you may have noticed, because... It's quite often in conference weekends, 10 and 11 get shoved together. You get an hour for, you know, a whole lot of material. And one of the things we, really like to do here, we started doing these workshops, and I got asked to do them a while ago. And I've gotten so much out of it. I really have. And I hope that my experience is really about growing. We talk so much about the progression of the disease of Alcoholics Anonymous. But really, you know, the whole point of the new freedom and the new happiness, the whole reason we're here is because there's a progression of sobriety. Life gets better and better and better if when you're on this road to happy destiny, no matter, you know, what's going on, it can always be improved on, no matter how beautiful my life is. And the whole point of these steps is that you don't get to decide how I feel about my life. And I don't know about you, but when I got to, you know, and Ashley did such a great job on step 10, you know, and anybody who knows me knows I love verbs, you know, ask, watch, pause, turn, cease fighting, continue is a really hard verb, right? Continue, when you get to rest, if you're always continuing. And what I found is that I have to have a rock solid step 10 if I'm going to be able to do step 11. Because I had these stage characters that I was talking about. I mean, they're loud, okay? They're really, really loud. They all have different opinions. And they pull me this way, and they pull me that way. And some of those stage characters are, you know, I got the mother, right? I've got the wife. I've got the daughter. I've got the sister. I've got the sponsor. I've got Super Sober Girl, right? I've got Xena the Warrior in there. I mean, revenge, you know, I got all of these different people, the artist and all of these voices in my head trying to tell me about what my life should look like, about how you should be treating me, about all of this stuff, right? And that's that 10th step really helps me to learn to watch myself. Because when we start talking about step 11, right, step 11 suggests prayer and meditation. And the first thing that I always like to start with is that meditation, when this book was written, had a very different colloquial meaning. In other words, I thought I knew what meditation was because I can get all zen. I can sit for hours. I mean, I'll do the whole, I can put my legs behind my head. I can, you know, I mean, I know what meditation is. And yet I'm drinking. And so when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, right, you know, I thought I knew how to do this. And fortunately, it was suggested that I just don't do the advanced version. That I keep it simple, that I stick to black words, white page. Okay, I don't do that very well, see? And when I started to actually look at what step 11 says, and this word meditation, that I have this old dictionary, and it defines meditation more along the lines of contemplation, how we understand contemplation today, to think long and deeply and in a directed way. And yet I was thinking about that think sign upside down, stinking thinking, can't trust my brain, all that stuff, which honestly I don't like. I heard you guys saying it. It sounded kind of fun. I kind of got on the bandwagon with it a bit. But the truth is, I'm a smart girl, or at least my, you know, GPA says so. And so it really kind of always bothered me, this idea that I'm not supposed to think. And so this idea of meditation, this antique dictionary that I have, it says, as an example, it says a general meditates his war. So in other words, you know, you think those big dioramas, right? And so if they go this way, then we're going to do this over here. But then, you know, if they try this other thing, we're going to do that way. And so I get to learn to direct my thinking. And as Ashley was talking, these are spiritual exercises. We get to exercise the will along this line all we want. It's the proper use of the will. And so I call 10 and 11 the spiritual exercises. We love getting, you know, to the gym when we get sober, right? You know, I'm going to buy the pass and all that. You know, I know how to work out my body. Well, this is the workout of my spirit. See, I've gotten my sanity back, I've gotten my willpower back, and the whole point of this is, how do I stay with God? How do I choose my life today? How do I keep my brain going the way I think it should be going, or the way I think God is actually asking it to go? So when I look at this, when we retire at night, that's what we're going to focus on, right? When we retire at night, we constructively review our day. How many here have ever really not wanted to do the nightly review? Okay. How many here have ever done the nightly review and felt afterwards like, yuck, about yourself? I think that happens because we're doing it wrong. That's just my opinion. Okay. I had this idea that meditation, like I said, was all about getting quiet. This is a meditation. This is my opinion. Okay, it's not my opinion. I really think I'm right, and I'm gonna tell you why. We usually conclude the period of meditation, that's why. So everything, you know, that they're talking about when we retire at night and upon awakening, and that these are really, they didn't have guided meditations the way we have guided meditations, because, you know, you couldn't download something. You could go get an LP or whatever, but like, this is really telling me about what I'm going to think. This is the outline of, here's what we're doing, and can I learn to think in the way that the big book is asking me to? So I'm from Texas, and I don't know how many of you guys have actually been to a rodeo, but most of you, okay, we got a few, good. But if you haven't, most of us have at least seen it on TV. And the quintessential rodeo thing is the Bronco Buster. That's some old boy whose job it is to get on a wild horse and hang on for dear life. And the whole reason that they have this sport is because back in the day, if you wanted a horse, you had to catch him. You had to catch him. So it was some guy's job to take the wild horse and jump up on his back and hang on for dear life. And when he gets thrown off, you know what he does? Gets back on. And then he gets thrown off again. And when he gets thrown off, he gets back on. And when he gets thrown off again, he gets back on. And over again, until they say the horse is broken. And the horse is willing to wear a saddle. And the horse becomes a tool. The horse will pull your carriage, it'll take you for a ride, it'll be gentle, it'll do what I want it to do. See, I thought what was in my head was true. I thought Xena the Warrior had to be listened to. I thought, you know, all of these stage characters, I didn't know that if it, just because it came into my mind, didn't mean I had to do everything. I didn't have to listen to all of it all of the time. And I didn't know that. And that's why I'm saying, like, for me, step 10 is a very important part of this. Because it's going to say at the end of this nightly review, but we must be careful not to drift into worry, remorse, or morbid reflection, for that would diminish our usefulness to others. See, that's my 10th step. I'm a ruminator. You know, you give me just a little bit of space. If I don't have something good to be thinking about, I go dark. I do. I don't know. I'm a noticer who notices everything bad. For me to notice good things takes willpower. Realigning. You know, I want to learn to see God's fingerprints on my life, but what an order. I mean, I always notice what you do wrong, but catching you being good is a big ask. And so this nightly review, right? Again, I was the kind of person who, there's nothing I like to beat up more than me. Self-flagellation, I come by it honestly. The Lutherans, I mean, they're just whips and chains, and it's like, you know, you're going to beat yourself into being good. That's how I was raised. You know, there was a whole lot of abuse in my house that, you know, I was being saved from hell. And so this, when I read this nightly review thing, that's what it kind of felt like. Now let's see how bad I've been. And so I didn't want to do it because at the end of it, it felt like one more failure, one more. I can't possibly live up to this ideal. You guys are asking me to do something I have no hope of achieving. So that's why I don't want to do it. And yet, you know, when it was pointed out to me that it's meant to be more of a meditation, that it's not meant to be a hurdle so high that I'm going to trip over it. It's not meant to be another way for me. I literally gave myself black eyes. You know, if somebody else isn't beating me up, I'm signing up for the job. So there's a part of me that could really misuse the nightly review. But when I actually looked at what is it saying, I had a different experience. When I use this idea of meditation being guided thought, choosing where my mind goes, you can't go where you don't aim. And they are, you know, Bill's clear here. We can give you some very definite suggestions. Here they are. When we retire at night, we constructively review our day. Now, we've been talking about building references, right? We're building this arch to freedom. But here I am. Now I'm going to take this as let's beat me up time. It's a constructive review. What is it I'm building? Again, I have to be sure that God wants me happy, joyous, and free. Anything that does not speak of love does not speak of God. So when I'm doing my nightly review, if it's all about the whips and chains, something's wrong. If at the end of this nightly review, I feel awful about myself, something is wrong. I need it to be a constructive exercise. The whole point of the nightly review, in my opinion, is to help me see how much God loves me. That it's not so much about how much I fell short. It's about how much love did I leave on the table today? How much was my higher power saying, please let me help you? And I missed it. Like I said earlier today, you know, like a spiritual person makes about 600 mistakes in a day. It's like the Dalai Lama, right? And I'm going, did I have any? And today my nightly review is much more like, where's Waldo? Because they're there. The mistakes are everywhere, but like I said earlier, my mistakes are not malicious. They are things that I really thought in the moment was the right stuff to do. For whatever reason, I thought I needed to protect me. For whatever reason, I really thought you were doing something to me, or whatever it was. So when I start looking at this, when were we resentful, selfish, dishonest, or afraid? Were we? Now, I'm not saying that, you know, you should, I know a lot of people sit at night and they write out a whole lot of inventory. That's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. If I get to bedtime and I haven't dealt with a resentment, I am too. But my normal nightly review does not entail writing reams of inventory. I don't have to do, because I've already taken care of it. Because of that 10th step, the way Ashley was talking about it. You know, I think of the 10th step like I got one hand in my pocket and the other one's doing things like hailing a taxi cab, you know, or whatever else I'm doing. I got that 10th step right here. I'm not waiting till the end of the day to clean anything up. The easiest inventory I ever learned in that 10th step is, am I holding God's hand? Because if I'm holding God's hand, you can't touch my third column. But at night, was I resentful? Did I get selfish? The answer is always yes. I personally have never gotten to say no. Well, I'm not saying I've never said no, but I it wasn't true. There's not a day in my life that I haven't had fear, doubt, insecurity, or something going on. That's just not my experience. Because it's impossible for me to always know that God's got me because I'm human. I'm human. My children, when they were little, when I was a kid, my parents would tug me in, but it wasn't the kind of tuck in I wanted. I mean, it was that whole, you know, and if you die, you know, and all that, and like, it was not a comforting kind of thing. And my mom didn't like doing it anyway, but I really always wanted that. So when my kids were little, I started tucking them in, and I tuck them in with the nightly review, guys. The nightly review is my tuck in from God. When I was with my son, and he, you know, he went through some really tough stuff when he was little. He couldn't walk, he couldn't talk, he couldn't eat hardly anything. He was horrifically bullied. He's been through the ringer, this little kid. And I would sit with him, tuck him in at night, and I would let him tell me about his day. I would let him tell me about the hurts and the pains. I would let him tell me about where he felt like he didn't do such a great job. And never once did I say to him, you should have done better. You let me down. No, the whole point is that I wanted him to be able to tell me, because I love him unconditionally, that there is nothing that that little boy can do that would disappoint me, because life is hard and we fall down all the time. It is impossible to walk through this world without fear, doubt, insecurity, and sometimes anger, resentment, and those other things. It is impossible. And yet I thought that this whole thing about the nightly review was telling me how much I failed. Wrong God. Whatever doesn't speak of love does not speak of God. That my nightly review, the whole point is that God's trying to say to me, kid, there's more love on the table. You know, when I got scared today, it was only because I didn't think God was actually there. It's only because that third column got activated, because you somehow hurt or threatened some part of self. My personal relations, my sex relations, my ambitions, my security, something going on in me that I think you have power over, because I forgot that my God has actually got me. If God has my third column, you can't touch me. That's the point of the nightly review, for God to be there putting his arms around me going, kiddo, there is more love here. The only thing I missed today was that God was there saying, how more can I help? I'm here, please let me. God's polite. He only comes where he's invited. And that's what I'm trying to see here. That's what I'm trying to tell my son. When I'm tucking him in at night, when I know he has to go back to the school where he was horrifically bullied, and you know, there was days I, at the end of his time there, I wouldn't even let him go to school, because I didn't know how to send him. You know, I would do everything that I could to protect him, but I knew that I couldn't. And you know, he got to a point, and I told you this earlier, where he could say to me, Mom, I just want to tell you. I don't need you to fix it. I just want you to know. And that's the thing. I want God to know. I want to know I'm not walking this alone. I want to know that God sees me. Because I didn't, when I was growing up, I was told that I was garbage. My father had a nickname for all of my sisters and brothers. And, you know, they were all cute, except mine. And he called me the bully. And the truth is, I wasn't the bully. I mean, I was the opposite of that, but I was the one that always got scapegoated, and I would get blamed all the time. And that was the relationship that I had with my father, and I would not trust information with either of my parents. When I was abducted, I wasn't at home. I was in a different city, and I was fortunate enough to escape, and I didn't want my parents to know, because I was afraid that they were going to tell me that I was going to hell because I'd been raped. Because that's the kind of relationship I had with my family. How can I possibly think that God could love me when I'm not doing it perfectly? Because I'm trying to keep the straight A's. My parents never seemed to say, good job, kiddo. My dad came to one basketball game in all the years I played basketball, and I happened to foul out at that game, and I got screamed at for humiliating him. You see, I look at this God that I walked in the door, it wasn't God. It was this idea that I had, and it wasn't an old idea. It was very much alive and well into years of sobriety. That when I did this nightly review and I felt like ick and I didn't want to do it, you know, it was not because of who God is, it's because of who I thought God was. Wrong God. That the main thing of my nightly review is how many times I keep mistaking what God is and who God is. And like I said earlier, for me, God is very much a verb. God is very much a verb. So when I look at these things, you know, I was resentful. And I think that means I'm not supposed to be. I get angry. I get frustrated. I get scared. And I think this inventory is telling me I'm not supposed to be. But what I've learned in Alcoholics Anonymous is that God gave me all of my emotions. They are God-given. That means they're here to help me, not to hurt me. That all I need to do is learn to use them in a godly way. That God doesn't approve of bad things happening like I thought God did. That anger that I have sometimes is God saying, no, no. That I'm not supposed to not get angry when somebody does something really quite wrong. Getting angry about my family trying to arrange the funeral so I can't be there is a healthy response to a bad situation. It is not telling me that I shouldn't be a person and I shouldn't have a voice and that I don't matter. That's not what it's saying. It doesn't. Acceptance does not mean you get to do whatever you want to do, period. Acceptance is you get to do whatever you want to do, and that has nothing to do with me. The world and its people are often quite wrong, and that's just not part of my story. That's your story. I'm done carrying your sack of rocks. I don't need to forgive you because you deserve it. My father doesn't deserve my forgiveness. I deserve my forgiveness, and my dad doesn't need it. That's between him and his God. I'm the one that needs to do the forgiving. I'm the one that needs to walk into this world a free woman. When I do this nightly review, I get to see how many stories I'm telling myself that just aren't true. They just aren't true. And see, there were a few things in this paragraph that really screwed me up for a while. I'll jump down a little bit. Things like, what could we have done better? And I thought that meant, again, I was supposed to be able to do everything right. And what is, I think it's actually saying, see, in the sex inventory, it says, what should we have done instead? And that's an ideal. Like Alice was saying, that's an ideal. You know, if I could go back in time, knowing what I know now, I would do this instead. If I'm going to Sunny's house and I've never been there before and I don't know how to get there and I miss my turn, and she says, well, honey, next time, turn left at the McDonald's. I'm going to know I should turn left at the McDonald's and it'll be better. But that's not what this says. It says, what could I have done instead? The question is, what tools did I have today that I didn't utilize? That's all. That there is more actual joy and peace and kindness and ways of being unaffected by your crap. I gave you the remote control, and here I'm doing the, you know, flipper thing again. And that's on me. That's my responsibility. It doesn't mean I'm bad. It means there's more love. There's a path to greater joy. That if I let God, see, lack of power is still my dilemma. It's always been my dilemma. It's always going to be my dilemma. I have to get higher powered. And this idea, there's this prayer. After making our review, we ask God's forgiveness and inquire what corrective measures should be taken. that really screwed me up for a while. Because the whole thing, what I hear it saying is, God, will you forgive me? That's what I hear it say. Anybody else agree with that? God, will you forgive me? Here I am begging for God's forgiveness yet again. You know, I don't know how long it was. I was reading this one day, and it always bugged me. Because if God made me human, and back to a human, right? A spiritual person makes 600 mistakes in a day. But now God made me so I can't do it perfectly. Cannot possibly do it perfectly. And now I've got to beg him for forgiveness. I don't get it. This does not compute. This is like alcoholic math again. 1 + 1 = a giraffe. I don't get it. I don't get it. And then one day, I was thinking about this lack of power thing. Jeff and I were in Bismarck, North Dakota a couple weeks ago, and it was cold. The wind chill was negative 60. It was a little chilly. And my the conference chair was going to take us all to lunch, and her car wouldn't start. I figure it's really cold. So you know what she did? She asked for somebody's car because her car didn't work. My forgiveness doesn't work. I'm asking for God's. See, I can't see me the way God sees me, and I can't see you the way God sees you. But when I look at you through God's eyes, I see a whole different thing. See, the way I see my son when I'm tucking him in at night, and I know that the reason he takes a course of action sometimes that looks like he's quote-unquote naughty is because he's scared, because he doesn't know how to deal with something. And I can have compassion for that. And maybe, just maybe, that's the way God's trying to get me to see myself. Maybe that's the point of the nightly review, so that when I ask God's forgiveness, that's what I want. God, I don't have the power to forgive myself. I don't have the power to see myself as you see me. Can you help me? Can I borrow yours? Can you put your love in my heart so that I can see you and I can see me in a different way? And when I started trying to look at the nightly review like I'm being tucked in by a kind and loving, because what do? We turn our will and our life over to the care of God. My God had never cared. And again, like I said, because the people who should have been taking care of me didn't, it never crossed my mind that God actually loved me. And I didn't have, when I had all these friends that we'd gotten sober together, and they had great gods, and I hated them for it, you know. And their gods would play jokes on them, and their gods were all fun, you know. That was not my God. That was just not my God. It took 3 years for me to have a feeling that God might just care a little bit about me, because all I could see was how much I got kicked, I got beaten, I got dragged, I got hurt. It was just so, and I thought that was God. I thought life was God, but life's not God. This is a design for a living that works in rough going. That the whole point of Alcoholics Anonymous is that we have a way of living that solves all of my problems, all of them. And my greatest problem is that I don't know who God really is. But as I had people in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous trying to tell me that they loved me, I didn't believe them. I did not believe them. I really thought that if you loved me enough, I'd be okay. I really, really thought that was the point. I just have to figure out how to get good enough so that you can love me, so that you will accept me. And there's nothing my child can do to make me ever stop loving, ever. Like, maybe there's a different issue sometimes. I don't always approve of what they're doing, but I always believe that they're, you know, they don't have to be good, they are good. Because God doesn't make junk. There is no such thing as a stepchild in God's world. I firmly believe that there is no one on the face of this earth that God loves more than he loves you and me. And that took a whole lot of willpower, a whole lot of realigning, getting back up on that horse, because my mind wants to tell me, you're better, not me. That's not going to happen for me. That's not, maybe God loves you. Sure, that's going to happen. I'm looking at what doesn't work in my life. And I was taught in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, just go out there and start looking for God's fingerprints. Where are God's fingerprints on? And that first starter sponsor, she would say, it's God thing, which drove me crazy. But she told me that I had to start being willing to look for, it didn't have to be a capital G God. But how about love? How about the little bitty things that people do, like, sure, go ahead. Hold the door for you. Look you in the eye. Those are the things that began to really matter to me, right? So when I actually, now today, when I retire at night, right, this is all about, first thing, Ashley mentioned it a little bit. So I am somebody who gets up very early in the morning, so I was trying to do the nightly review, and I'm doing the head bob. Because I think I know what it's telling me to do when I retire. That's the last thing you do before you go to sleep, right? The word retire doesn't mean go to sleep necessarily. You know, it really, my belief is that it's when the work of my day is done. I don't get into a whole lot of trouble watching Netflix. I don't know, maybe you do, but you know, like, I can actually do my nightly review much earlier in the day because I don't have interactions going on there. You know, and so I started doing it earlier so that I could come at it not from this depleted, empty kind of a space, but in a place where I could still use that 10th step. Because as soon as my mind starts going, no, that's not, you know, and shame on you and all that, I had to have enough spiritual energy still to say, that is not God. That's not what God's asking of me. I have to be sure that God wants me happy, joyous, and free. I have to insist on enjoying my life. Wait a minute. I have to insist on enjoying my life. That includes every moment of every day. That includes the nightly review. This should actually be enjoyable. I like tucking my son in. It was so much fun when he was little. Bath time and tuck in. I love it. Now, how about that? What if when I go to sleep, that's what the kind of feeling I get? So with, you know, the kind of abuse and garbage that I had when I got to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, I had a lot of nightmares. I really did not like sleeping because I just had horrific nightmares for years. And I have to be honest, it wasn't right away when I realized it, but when I started trying to do the nightly review differently, I started sleeping better. Because I wasn't going to bed with that ugly, judgmental God in my head. Instead, I was going to bed choosing to feel loved, choosing to see the beauty of my life, choosing to feel cared for. And I stopped having nightmares. It took a while because there was a lot of ugly stuff, but I stopped having nightmares. Not only that, but a number of years ago, now this is when there's all kinds of chaos with my kids, they're sick, and you know, it's a tough life, right? There's a lot going on. Hardest thing I ever did was learn to give God my kids. You know, there's a whole lot of fear, and a lot of it was justifiable. My son couldn't eat milk, soy, eggs, wheat, nuts, fish, shellfish, corn, peas, carrots, latex. He couldn't jump in the ocean. The only thing he could eat, my daughter was deathly allergic to. Every meal, we had a triple kosher kitchen is what I called it. He had his plates and his silverware and his glasses, and she had hers, and David had his, right? And we couldn't put them all in the dishwasher because cross-contamination, and they could die. And I'm sitting in the middle feeding them. He had this like pizza stuff with roux on it, you know, so it looked like pizza, but it's wheat, and she'll die if she touches the wheat, but she's got cheese on it, and he'll die if she touches. And I'm in the middle with an EpiPen. At every meal, breakfast, lunch, dinner, snack. I'm in the middle with an EpiPen. And of course I have fear. How could I not? But see, that fear was here to help me, not to hurt me, so that I was vigilant, so that I understood. They needed separate. So I'm an artist. I am not a type A person. I am not the girl who's going to say, you should have these and you should have those and we're going to put them here. And no, that's not my, but circumstances made me willing. I was willing to let God discipline me in this simple way. And I hated the word discipline because discipline meant something in my mind that isn't true. The word itself means to teach. Am I willing to let God teach me in this simple way? To grow in understanding and effectiveness. That's the point of the nightly review. When it says, do we owe an apology? Because the thing is it's not that, you know, who is it that I owe? Do I owe my dad? Do I owe you? Do I owe Adam? Who do I owe an apology to? It doesn't say to whom. It says, do we? It's me I owe. I need to get right. See, if I don't make these amends, I'm not right with God. I get blocked by the sunlight of the sunlight of the Spirit. And if I'm blocked from God, I'm dead. If I'm not happy, joyous, and free, that's the problem. You may think I owe you an apology. The question is, do I think I owe you an apology? My sisters have a long list of things they think I should do differently. But that doesn't necessarily mean that I should. That you don't have to be the person, you know, that I need you to be. And because I have that freedom, I don't have to be the person you think I should be. I get to be the person God called me to be. That's what the inventory is asking. Did, you know, God is all about love. Did I bring enough love into this day, or was I holding back? Am I being stingy, or am I being that channel of peace? Am I willing to sit on the second row? Am I willing to say, that's your business and not mine? Whatever. Whatever is the most spiritual term I've ever seen. Have you seen any of the conference shirts? It says whatever. And on the back, it says, see Appendix 2. If you don't get it, see Tom or me. You know, but that's true. That's what this night, like, can I get to a place where I can say, God, take me? Because I actually trust in that God today. Have we kept something to ourselves which should be discussed with another person at once? Should, that's the ideal. Because I don't want to have it ricocheting around in my head. If I can't let go of something, I have people in other time zones to call. I mean, and when it's driving me crazy, the thing is, I know today that whenever I'm disturbed, the problem is with the redhead. It's not you. You get to be wrong. Have fun with that. It has nothing to do with me. Why is it? What am I holding on to? What do I, the false belief that God isn't big enough to solve this. God has taken me through some unbelievable, incredible things. You know, my kids like mine don't, I didn't used to live. And they're both totally healthy. They can eat anything. They can go anywhere. That little boy who couldn't walk, couldn't talk. He's going to be on the United States debate team for the World Championships in April in Australia. And I don't even have to worry about what he's going to eat. He can eat everything. And that's not supposed to happen. And when I started down this path, you know, and people were telling me that there wasn't anything I could do, and I was looking into all kinds of whatever, and the head of Children's Hospital said, told me I was irresponsible to be trying to do these things. And I didn't say this out loud, but what I heard in my heart was, you don't know my God. And I thought I would be irresponsible not to try everything. Because I see miracles every day in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I did not go down the path expecting it to get solved. I went down that path because what you told me is I have to know that I've done my best and to accept what is. Acceptance is the key to all of my problems, but action turns that key. Acceptance doesn't mean you get to do whatever you want to me. It means what you do has nothing to do with me. If I practice radical acceptance, then I can hear God better about how I should take the next step. I can see more of the truth of the situation and that I don't need to worry about you. I need to worry about me. What's God putting me in for? How do I show up bigger and with a more kind and more loving heart? Can I love you enough? Because if, when you guys told me that if I loved you enough, I'd be okay, I didn't believe you. But I didn't have anything else. So I started down this path of trying to love you. What can I give? And I come from a place where I need to protect mine. I need to protect mine. And I don't buy that anymore, because my idea of protecting me never seems to work out. But when I'm there going, sign me up for service, God, where do you want me? Now I got my God armor on. Because I have a God who does care. I have a God who does not settle for second best. I have a God that I am sure wants me happy, joyous, and free. And if I am not, it's the redhead. That my job is to have that spiritual temper tantrum. Anybody here a temper tantrum person? I mean, I'm a temper tantrum person. I am not going to do anything that I don't want to do. And you guys taught me that every character defect is a character asset out of proportion. So learn to have a spiritual temper tantrum. Nobody can make me upset. Nobody can make me have a bad day. Nobody can make me into the woman that I don't want to be. That's my business. I have the remote control back again. How many times today did I get the delusion that Anthony had it, or Jeff had it, or Zoe had it? Somebody else had it, and I think you have the ability to do something to me. But you see, I'm not trading with you anymore. My job is to love you, period. If you love me back, it's bonus. What that story of my mother's funeral is, that the love is there. I just don't know where it's coming from. Can I be open enough to say it can come from wherever God sends it? Or am I going to get my head all up where the sun don't shine because it didn't come in the color I wanted? If I gave you, you know, a present wrapped in old newspaper, would you take it? Or would you insist on the Tiffany box? I like the Tiffany box, but the thing inside is the same. It's love. And I think I know what it is because of what I think it looks like. But see, that's the mistake I keep making over and over and over again. Mistakes. I think I know what's going on, and I don't. But it's not a malicious thing. And God's not up there with a ruler cracking it on my knuckles. That's not my God today. And if that's your God, I'd suggest you fire him. I suggest you try God as a verb. The is of this program. How do I stay in motion loving you? So when I do this retire at night, right? Were we kind and loving towards all? You think they really mean all? My sponsorship lineage is very, very, very stuck on the small words. All. How about the people I like? Can they be all? All. Everyone. Absolutely everyone. Kind and loving. In other words, not an asshole? No, that's not kind and loving. What does it mean to be kind and loving? What does it mean to be kind? Just kind. Dude, can I practice kindness today? I was really, you know, I thought my, doing my nightly review when I was new, it was like, yeah, I was kind and loving towards all. I didn't do anything awful. Woohoo! And it's grown. The question is, how intentional am I? We talk about conscious contact. That's the point of a meditation, isn't it? We're talking about conscious contact. How am I in conscious contact today? How much was I holding God's hand? Because when I'm holding God's hand, you can't touch my third column. When I'm holding God's hand, I do love you. I am kind. I do care. That's it. There's no other agenda. As soon as I have any fear, doubt, insecurity, I'm not holding God's hand anymore. And I get bright ideas when I'm not holding God's hand. Really bright ideas. There was this newspaper article when my daughter was little, and I loved taking the kids to the zoo, so this really freaked me out, because this family had gone to the zoo, and they let their little girl run around, and she ended up in the lion's cage, and she died. And I identify, Because when I'm running around, see, you know, good parent holds on to their kid. But see, in this relationship with my higher power, it's my job to hold God's hand. God only comes where God is invited. His hand's there for me to hold if I want it. And if I'm not holding God's hand, I get bright ideas like, I'm going to go pet the pretty kitty. And then I wonder why I've been mauled. And I walk into situations like the one I was telling you about at my mother's house where the police get called. Because I dropped God's hand. It is not shame on you. It is there's more love on the table. There was love on the table. I have to learn to listen to this consciousness deep down inside of me. That's what it, when they're talking about that sixth sense, it is vital. Because if I'm not living that truth, I am going to pet the pretty kitty. And that's not pretty when it happens. And I have made that mistake time and time and time again. And I want to get mad at the lion. But the lion is a lion. And I have a tendency to look out here. And, you know, I know who my family is. So why is it sometimes I have a good relationship with my dad because today I know who he is, and he is a wonderful person. He's just not a great dad. And if I go to him for the things that I wanted from a father, I am going to be disappointed. I am going to be hurt. To want those things is not bad, but I have to let God show me where I should be going. And you don't go to the hardware store for oranges. And you don't go where I know I'm going to set him up to fail. I have set my father up to fail time and time and time again, demanding that you do for me, that you change so I don't have to. That's the measure of the inventory. That's not kind. That's not loving. My father has never once been left alone with my children. Never once. And he has no idea. We welcome him into our home. He comes for most Christmases. We have a great time most of the time. But he has never been unsupervised because my father unsupervised with children is a recipe for a disaster, and I don't have to tell him that. I do not need to go to my father and tell him that he is not allowed to be around my children, that he is not safe, that he's not trustworthy. He wouldn't be able to hear it. He wouldn't understand it. And it's not his experience. He thinks he was Father of the Year. And I do not need to school him differently. That's between him and his God. What I know is he's a great grandfather to my kids. He will sit on the floor and he will play blocks with them, but he needs to be supervised. When he is supervised, he's wonderful. Can I set him up to succeed? Am I willing to bring God into this equation? Because it's not that he's all bad and I should write him off. It's I get to let God direct me, and I get to be kind and loving towards all, even the people that aren't kind and loving towards me. Because it's not about trading. You don't earn my kindness. You don't earn my love. You just get it. I just love you. I just love you. Because you taught me what love is. In the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, you showed me what love is. And it was a whole different definition than what I thought it was. So when I'm looking at this thing, right, this, what could we have done better? That's about vision. That's because I get to do this again tomorrow. I get to aim for just a little bit more joy, a little bit more happiness. It is not about, you screwed up. It is about how much more there was, how great today could have been, that I could have been on that pink cloud with the newcomers. Am I willing to get there? Am I willing to take the time, the effort? Am I willing to have the humility to say, I don't know. Will you show me? So this prayer, right? After making our review, we ask God's forgiveness and inquire what corrective measures should be taken. That this idea, you know, were we thinking about what we could, Were we thinking of what we could do for others, of what we could pack into the stream of life? That those two things, that's what the corrective measures are really for me. That how more today, tomorrow, am I going to be able to think about you more? Because when I think about you more, I lose the bondage of self. When I get busy loving you, I feel loved. When I love you enough, it melts the polar ice cap from around my heart, and I finally feel the love that's always been there. Always been there. It's not that my dad didn't love me. It's not that my mother didn't love me. They just loved me in a different flavor. Anybody ever go to Baskin-Robbins? They got a whole lot of flavors in Baskin-Robbins. And believe it or not, they don't do that because it sounds cool. They do it because somebody actually eats all those flavors. They make money off of every single flavor they carry. And I have this idea that you think like I do. But I promise you, I don't like pistachio ice cream. I don't like chocolate. I don't like ice cream. I'm the one ordering the soft serve and or the frozen yogurt, okay? You know, but there's a reason there are all those different flavors. And I have this idea that what you did means something, because if I did that, it would mean what I think. But that doesn't mean you feel that way either. What my dad did to me doesn't mean to him what it meant to me. And that's what grace is about. And so when I'm doing this nightly review thing, right, and I'm trying to just get a different perspective, one of the things my sponsor told me, she's like, why don't you pray for God to let the world treat you today the way you treated the world yesterday? And how about you ask for God to let you see yourself through their eyes? How about that? How about when I go into that nightly review and I really think about, did you feel loved today? Did the people I encountered, did they feel seen? Was I able to show up for them as well as I could? And it's not that you have to be pleased with my performance. It's that I need to know that I did try. And I know a lot of people in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous say, we don't try, we do. God bless you. That sounds great, except in my big book it says try a whole lot. And you don't get to tell me whether or not I'm trying with a whole heart. Because I know if I am. I know when I'm putting in my 100%. I do. And the difference of my 100% today is way different than it was 30 years ago. And it's different than it was 5 years ago. And sometimes it's different than it was 5 weeks ago. That I don't need to be sitting there telling you how you need to live differently. I want to be there asking God, where do you need me? I just want to be one of God's blocks today to build with me and do with me. That divine participation that we're invited into with our higher power, that's the God. See, if I trust that God, when I do this nightly review, I know that God's crazy about me today because I can finally see the blessings raining down on my head. I have such a beautiful, beautiful life, and I have a lot of problems too. And it's really easy for me to focus on what I don't like about my life. I can give you a list about the things that, you know, once upon a time I would have told you should be different. Things like, I can't stand for very long. That's why I move around a lot. You know, I've got a lot of physical problems, a lot of them. I'm heading into another big surgery. And I was born with a very deformed body. My spine is not holding up. I'm not going to be walking much longer. And don't feel sorry for me because I got a better life than most of the people I know. Because I am not my body. Because that stage character of the woman who needs to be able to run and jump and do all that, she's not who I am. that the truth is I do not need any of that stuff. That I know people who are so happy, so joyous, and so free, and they can't do a lot of things. I've had blind friends, and a friend who's his daughter was 16 years old. Just this happened just a few months ago, and she's learning to drive. And she accidentally put her foot on the gas instead of on the brake, and she ran over her father, and she pinned him to the wall of the garage and amputated his legs. And he's got such an incredible attitude. And he trusts his God. And he is not about to make it about anything different. Because he knows how hard that's already going to be on her. And so he is not about to have anything except absolute confidence and absolute faith that God is bigger than all of his problems. And they have let us show up in their lives and take food. And, you know, that's what we do here. Alcoholics Anonymous to me is all about alchemy. The alchemists were trying to turn lead into gold. And we do spiritual alchemy in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. What we do is we turn crap into gold. That's what we do. I mean, and when the pressure's really, really, really high, you know what you get? Diamonds. Man, that's when we sparkle. Don't tell me what God can't do. Those kids of mine are living incredible lives because they got raised in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. Because you guys help them see that there's nothing to feel sorry for. So what, they can't eat all of the stuff you can eat? They've got better cake anyone. Everybody wanted the tapioca cake recipe. Because you guys showed me that I got to show them that they're not victims of this life. That if I am willing to suit up and show up, that there is more love. There is enough love to make anything sweet. My job is to squeeze those lemons, to have that God eliminate and know God's got the sugar. He's got enough sugar. You bring it on. You just bring it on. Don't tell me what God can't do. And if I go to bed tonight forgetting that, you see, the whole point is growing in understanding and effectiveness. My God today is effective. And if you come to me and you have proof, let's say you got proof that God's not real. Hard evidence that God's not real. And you come to me and you tell me I got one thing to tell you. I don't care. Because my belief in God, my choice to put my life into the care of God as I understand God, has given me an incredible life. It has given me a way to walk through anything. Oops, I accidentally had a good life. That's a mistake I'm willing to live with today. You see, that's what a spiritual temper tantrum is. My God is bigger than any problem you throw at it. You guys taught me what love is. You guys taught me that I was worth saving. You guys taught me that my only job is each and every day to choose love, to choose God, to not quit, no matter what, one day at a time, to absolutely insist, to have that spiritual temper tantrum, and when I go to bed at night, to let God's loving arms embrace me and show me that even with all these blessings raining down on my head, there was still more love on the table. It's just a cafeteria. I can only have what I'm willing to put on my plate. You go to the ocean with a thimble, you get a thimble full of water. How much of love, how much God, how much do you want? I'll take the straw. Thanks for my sobriety.